Hello, and welcome to the second podcast for the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. I have a little stuff that I wanted to express. Let's see. Okay, so in this one there is some discussion about Willie Loomis, and there's also some stuff about abuse. So it's heavy going, but I think you'll understand what I'm talking about when I introduce a lot of this stuff. And also, the boys, Sir Simon Milligan and manservant Hecubus, they show quite a bit of desire and celebration for Angelique. So I like that a lot because, like I said, I'm trying to celebrate everybody and have them celebrate themselves. So they're rooting for her. There's another person that's going to show up that they won't root for. And so I appreciate the characters Sir Simon Milligan and Hecubus for that, because they really have that demons that are polite. And I admire that a lot, and it's all its goofy charm. And also for the fact that we like these dark shows for a reason, and it's not because we're necessarily evil. I don't know about all y'all, but I think a lot of us enjoy them for a different purpose. Okay, so one thing I want to express is I'm not sure how other writers, mostly fan fiction, feel about their characters the way I do. When I see characters going through a lot of hurt, I can get very drawn into that. As I've worked on my own material for most of my life, I've really come to see my characters as my children. So even in this adopted form, I feel like I've got a lot of abused children from Oliver Twist, if you're familiar with the story by Charles Dickens, particularly Willie Loomis. My original intention with him in this story was to show this shaky, blithering reaction to everyone being nice. But when I finally got to episode 14, he didn't come out that way at all. He seemed to respond much closer to the original character. I know there are intensely strong fans of his. Over the course of the original program, when I was watching it, I became very disturbed by his reaction to Adam, which is why in my rewrite here, I just kept him away longer. The other reason I really wanted to wait on him is I wanted him to have a better place to come back to. So in the long run, I've had to recognize a mirror image effect he's had on me. When I finally did work more on Mr. Loomis, I really had this desire of a sheltering harbor. Barnabas had been terribly rotten to him, but prior to that I saw Jason McGuire's character as being much worse. I mean, believe it or not, I mean, maybe there's a little debate over that, but I really did. McGuire's motives were pure greed and manipulation of people for its own sake. That's what I saw with him. And Barnabas was more of a problematic psychological yearning for this lost love. So in that way, I see McGuire as being way worse. In fact, I bless the actor, I think his name is Dennis Patrick, who played McGuire, because he wanted to leave so bad. And I think there were like family reasons and they were just weren't letting him go. And it sounded like he, in an interview of his, that he was going to, it was going to come to blows. It was going to be fisticuffs if he didn't get let go from the show. And I, bless his heart, Barnabas finally got a free lunch. And so anytime that Angelique was driving me crazy, I could get relief, and I still can. I'll just do, you know, like, just doing a little Jason McGuire is still dead dance. And when I was first watching it especially, I was like, go away. You're just making it a regular soap opera. This is supposed to be a spooky soap opera. Just go away. And I felt so bad for Liz and so bad for Carolyn. And finally it was like, oh yeah, open that coffin. Come on, dude. Open it. Open it. And I'm like, yes. And gosh, Willie was trying to save him. Poor man. Although I did appreciate a lot when at some point he was really worried about Maggie. And he said that Barnabas was going to do to Maggie what, you know, was done to Jason McGuire. And then he sort of reflects for a second. He's all, the difference is Jason deserved it. Yes. Yes. So he was coming along pretty good for me then. Let's see. Okay, so back to the serious stuff. So when I worked on Willie Loomis, I started to see some very scary aspects of my own encounters with abuse. I don't really want to go into those, but let me say I have a pretty good idea where he's coming from, especially when it comes to Jason McGuire's mental and verbal abuse of him. So many staunch fans of Willie Loomis honestly used to get me to raise an eyebrow or two in disbelief. However, you may be pleased to know that since I wrote for him, I understand now. So when the butler makes the comparison in my episode 2 here, I think it speaks volumes, and it was one of the revisions I made to the first run that I had for a while. Also, in this episode, you'll notice how the dominoes are falling. One good deed sets another good deed off. And we've also got Carolyn analyzing that though she'd been pretty foully treated by Barnabas, some good did come out of it as a result. And Carolyn, you know, I remember Nancy Barrett mentioning in an interview how, you know, why wasn't this girl at college or something? And so I touch on that in episode 4 or 5, where she goes into describing why she hadn't gotten around to it. And I felt that it needed to be addressed because, yeah, I mean, I think Nancy Barrett was right. So why isn't this girl off to college or something? And, of course, during the conversation where she reflects on, not the college thing, because that's later, but in episode 2 here, she reflects on, you know, even the foul treatment, some good came out of it. And the heroic Dr. Hoffman sets the ball rolling with some sound advice, which is good. I think I like to see Dr. Hoffman in more of a Jungian psychologist capacity of some kind, rather than just like, oh, look at this medallion, pretty, isn't it? And you're like, can we open a book, please, and look at, you know, not a way to solve these bigger supernatural problems, but can we look at Dr. Hoffman's ability to take an actual problem, like an internal mental struggle, and just, you know, guide a little light in one direction. And it was really good when I made that revision because other things were happening in the story in later episodes. And so this gave her a chance to like be one of the dominoes that fall and help that to happen. So with that, there are certain elements of the original Dark Shadow story I'm keeping for that purpose. As like Willie Loomis and Jason McGuire, Willie seemed to remain a kind of scuzz bucket. Whereas when he comes to be the victim of a vampire, something really turns him around. And I can see how it could. In the long run, I do keep him at Wyncliffe longer, and that's for safety reasons to him. And in retrospect, it's just like, you just want to hug the man and shelter this poor guy, you know, and keep him safe, because he's just so pathetic. And in this, I don't know, I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. I also see Willie Loomis as possibly taken for plain stupid too often. And I believe he's more a case of lost potential, which I also really know from personal experience. So by my 5th episode, I find him something to do with that lost potential. And it was a goofy idea at first, but when the results in later episodes happened, I was really amazed at the importance of it. So with him, I do touch on the aspects of abuse and their sad results, which I think is very insightful. Also, for anyone who has trouble with the word abuse, I've been told that it implies there is a proper way to use someone. Technically, I see that as being true, as a proper, you know, the proper use of someone. I was watching an episode of Sherlock Holmes, and Holmes asked Watson if he'd help him with something, and then Watson says, "I'm here to be used," so... And that, I think Watson had it down there. Also, I remember in a Marx Brothers biography, one of the relations mentioned how Minnie Marx, the mother to the Marx Brothers, knew how to use all her relatives during gatherings. And what she was talking about was either in the kitchen or getting the table spread, that kind of thing. So making use, quote unquote, of someone isn't such a gnarly concept when it comes down to it. And that word abuse, I think, still applies as stronger than use or misuse. All right, here's the heavy stuff. As for Angelique, who finally gets a mention in this episode, I want to say I do have good plans for her, and really fine ones, meaning she will eventually come into play as a component for the greater good, but it's been a struggle. In comparison, I've had some seriously difficult ways to make Barnabas a better person and forgivable, whereas when it comes to turning around Angelique... Barnabas was a piece of cake, but I do see how she can be developed. I know that many seasons down the road she does wise up, but my take on this is getting it done much earlier than in the original program, and I think with a different flair, and hopefully one you're going to like. Because I love this idea, especially with what I've been doing with all the other bonus characters who've been helping them out. Now, I know some of the listeners to this are people who don't know the show, and I don't know how many of them are going to spend the $400 and the 600 odd hours of getting it all in. So there's going to be some spoilers here for the original show. You can skip it, go to wherever the time index of the you want. I don't know how long it's going to be. So for listeners who are wondering how bad this bad girl is, I'll list a few things. I didn't want to include them in my story because I really had no desire to relive them. And they're just way too numerous. And as you probably know, I have a hard time. The drama in the romance I was able to do. Some of the stuff where people are just being mean, it's tough for some reason. It's really tough. It's better to just say this happened and have everybody deal with the problem than, you know, making it a radio play where you're like the long bite of a vampire. I mean, how you just, I don't know what you would do if you would just exhale or breathe heavy or what. I just, not worth it. So let's see. All right. So going back to 1795, where all the trouble started, that's where Barnabas, you know, that was his original time period before he woke up in the swinging 60s. And there was also in the Dark Shadows original program, somebody from the 60s went back to experience and see what it was like in 1795. So that was, of course, the governess, Victoria Winters. And that was the seance thing. So for Victoria Winters, she's often accused by Reverend Trask in 1795 of being a witch. And while he's using some ritual to prove this by making VW run out of the house, Angelique makes Victoria believe her room is on fire. So, of course, she runs out, which makes Trask look correct. That's not very nice. That's rather nasty. Then there is the use of the voodoo doll on Barnabas, which is not only totally painful to him, but rends the heart of poor Josette Dupre watching him suffer. Then there is a manipulative spell she casts on Barnabas's very young and very innocent sister, Sarah, who also is taken to her bed with an illness no one can understand. And oh boy, look who has some tea that will cure Sarah. Yep, Angelique. And what is her price? Barnabas has to marry her if it works. Nasty. Nasty, nasty, nasty. Mm-mm-mm. Meanwhile, Angelique does a few more spells to get Josette to obsess over Barnabas's uncle Jeremiah instead of Barnabas, who she was betrothed to. And then one on Jeremiah in kind, so they elope. And then after a rather swift honeymoon, start to get really confused at what the heck happened. This one I do aim to address how Josette felt about it in a later episode, because I am very sure I understand how gross that turn of events could feel, for sure. I've got a good example for it. Any Josette and Jeremiah quote-unquote love I saw after that was seriously on the avenue of convention of the time. To me, anyway. Different days, different ways. There is a duel between Barnabas and Jeremiah. I guess Barnabas is a good shot. So, Jeremiah's ghost is wandering around terrifying everyone. And thankfully, Angelique is one of the people he's terrifying. Deservedly so. By this time, she's bewitched the family servant, Benjamin Stokes, to help her get these things done. So when Jeremiah finally gives her some well-deserved haunting, Ben Stokes can finally laugh, and boy, was that a relief to us here. Ah, yes it was. Then, of course, the marriage takes place between Angelique and Barnabas, and all the horrible ways she achieved this is unknown by him, so he thinks it's all good. What a duel. But he figures out that she was the end-all, be-all of all the crap going on, and shoots her. To which she curses him into being a vampire, and the lovely squeaking bit of rubber flaps down and gets him. Ha ha. The nicest spell Angelique did that I felt was kind of appropriate was turning Barnabas's father Joshua into a cat. Now, that one we must have a smile at, I think. Thank heavens there was one that wasn't so grim. Now, by this time, as you can easily imagine, Barnabas's mother, Naomi, has really taken to the bottle watching all of this happen. That mother has watched her son fall ill, see his fiancée marry elsewhere, harbored her son and his other bride by giving them the old house, Bless her poor heart. And somewhere in there watch her young daughter die. Then she has to endure that her son has become a vampire. So poor Naomi finally takes to poison and dies herself just to escape this madness.
Understandably. So back to Angelique and this series of crazy events. Like I said in my previous intro, I know not just a one-night stand. And I know maybe not just one drink involved, but it happens to the best of us. And these results, though, are so extreme. And it doesn't stop there, but I'm not going to explain anymore. Now, after all that, not even the stuff from the 60s, do you find this young woman, Angelique, admirable in anything other than determination? Really? And I'm really asking this to anyone born after the show aired. I have a feeling we've come a long way since those gloomier days. Really? Admirable? Sweet? No. However, like I said, where there's a will, there's a way. I think her redemption is coming. And as for this episode, we're not really going to see Angelique until episode 4 has her incarnation, quote-unquote, of Cassandra. With that lovely mop. And so it's episode 2. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to add. I wrote this one way before the movie came out. And I don't want to talk about the movie too much because I know all y'all, pro or con fans, are just wildly hostile towards each other. So I don't want to mention it too much. But there's a lot of talk about chamber pots. So I remember they mentioned in the film from last year, or 2012, something about chamber pots. And so I was thankful that I wrote this, you know, it was at least published online in February of 2012, which was way before May. And and I really did analyze that. When did everybody have time to start sinking their teeth into each other in 1795? I mean, poor Ben, he didn't get a wink of sleep, but he's just like poor Willie. I mean, when do these people sleep? You know, presumably there are these, for want of a better word, red shirts kind of wandering around, also helping with everything that has to be done in the houses. But you got to wonder, that there was a lot of stuff going on, and heaven help their dreams. Also, if nobody knows, the coffee substitute joke in here, I've actually had that substance, and I kind of miss it. I'm kind of sad that it's gone. I'd like it to come back if it was the original recipe. I don't know, maybe it's bad for you, who knows. But it was interesting. So if anybody knows of a coffee substitute that's similar to that one, I'm curious. And then the Evans in this episode, when I mentioned in my previous podcast, when I mentioned not using a treadmill and that I almost fell down walking to work when I was listening to it, I mean, it's just the ridiculousness. And I had to use all of that coffee stuff in there because they talked about it so much. And one of the things that really charmed me about the program was when I was in my teens, I was first introduced to a percolator. And it was old school. We had to use a metal pot. What did we do? We put it directly on the coil. There wasn't really a kitchen per se. I mean, there was no oven. Well, there was a wood stove oven, but we never used it. So there was this hot plate with two coils. So we would place, it was just a weird combination of stuff. We placed the metal coffee pot with the percolator device inside it. It didn't quite fit correctly, but I mean, there was no oven in the house except a wood stove that we never used. And this other hot plate kind of in this other area. So the metal pot right on the coil had the percolator device inside. And so we just have to guess when it was done. We'd have to just kind of go and lift it with a pot holder and see, okay, is it brown? All right, it's probably done. And it's like burbling up. So when I saw Dark Shadows and they're talking about the coffee on the perk, I'm like, dynamite. Oh my gosh. I just so touched by that. And now in later episodes, they never talk about it anymore. And I'm like, oh, come back. Come back, you percolator. And since then, I have received a 1967 percolator from my in-laws, kindly. And it's in such good condition. They keep everything in good condition. And
It's just like a plug-in one, but I mean, it's really something else to have that old technology. Another reason that I enjoy watching these old programs. And I think that the kids would also like it. They want to see how things are done. I think the little kids are really into the, you know, video games and the close range stuff and all the, you know, stuff we have now with the portable devices and that kind of thing. But I still maintain, I think when they get older, they're going to get curious about how we lived. And I'm still curious. I've done so much research on the Victorian era, on some of the Jane Austen time period. It just gets a little too grim. I don't like to explore it too much. And for this, I mean, beyond this, I've done a lot of research. I was really curious, what did people listen to when there was no radio? And because they really seem to enjoy it. And also I've noticed in historical, I don't really call them reality shows. They seem more like those experiment, you know, like Manor House, Frontier House, that kind of thing. What I notice with the people when they react, they all seem to have the same reaction to being taken away from all the media entertainment that they've been soaked in most of their lives. And when they hear music, it really has a profound effect on them. And that is one of the things about those house shows that I think is really an eye-opener. That music just it being so precious. And people just had to play it. I mean, you didn't put a CD in anywhere or click anything. You had to sing it yourself. So I think that's it. So this is sort of like a rush through the seance part. The next episode is pretty interesting because I know that there was some curiosity of what the heck does Mrs. Johnson think of all this and what does she do? So the next episode is really going to do more skipping, but it's going to be Mrs. Johnson explaining it. And I think that she came out pretty good. She was more with it. She was less scared. And I think I'm going to keep her that way because even though originally she does freak out and does have her issues, I think deep down, Mrs. Johnson is a chill lady. Very chill. She'd have to be if she's working there and stayed. So I think that's it. Let me know what you liked, if you can. Any little thing. A little bit goes a long way. And as Sir Simon Milliken says, don't forget to floss. And if you haven't yet, call your mom. Enjoy. The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, Episode 2. Chamber Pots and Coffee Cups.
Good evening, and welcome to the Pit of Ultimate Darkness. I am your host, Sir Simon Milligan. Listen. Listen. Listen to my voice. And know that to listen to my voice is to listen to the voice of evil.
Yellow!
Ah! Manservant Hecubus, ladies and gentlemen.
I am ready to serve you, Master. And Satan!
Evil.
It has come to my attention that we've presented only a smidgen of evil updates on this program. Too many lovely things have been happening.
That is terrible, Master. What kinds of things?
Well, to bring our listeners up to snuff, there was the demise of Jason McGuire before our first episode. That was far too lovely to be believed. Then, of course, our poor Miss Winters was sadly devastated over the passing of her odd engagement choice, Burke Devlin. And yes, I know. What a beautifully evil last name he had.
Ah, yes, Master. What a left bummer.
And then there was the experiment as Dr. Hoffman tried to turn Mr. Vampire Collins into a normal man. This went significantly foul as he ended up becoming the true age he might be if he was mortal.
Aren't you skipping ahead, Master? Aren't you giving away spoilers to those just tuned in?
Yes. And that's a little evil.
Yes, a little tiny pathetic little bit of evil.
Shh! Now.
Yes. Master.
There are still updates to make in this episode. As an intensely crusty version of a once elegant vampire was getting over the distress, our Carolyn Stoddard wandered in to discover his coffin and was aggrieved to become his victim. However, this was lucky, as her scintillating hemoglobin seemed to give him a true cure for the false one he let himself in for. He was certainly pleased to halt the endurance of excessive medication he needed to keep going at all.
My, that's a lot of skipping, Master. Are you sure we aren't ready for a peep yet?
Well, considering the television show this story is based on is over 1,200 episodes in length, and well over 600 hours long, give or take commercials, we do have to work on some augmenting.
But what about Barnabas Collins' new butler? How does he fit into all of this?
Well, I suppose he's mostly shaking his head and putting up with it, unfortunately. But he's a tough old chap. We can still expect better things to come. For some reason that we cannot recall, many residents of the estate began a seance for the sake of David Collins' troubles. This somehow helped Victoria Winters fall into 1795, and much was learned about why Barnabas Collins became a vampire, as well as a lot of other destructive problems throughout another effusive 94 episodes, or about 39 hours of television watching, if you want to get technical.
And then we knew our sweetness.
Yes, the woman of total cruelty, the lady with all the tarot cards alight, our most evil and beloved Angelique, at last. I've been waiting to drool over this mistress of the deepest dark. Although, it'll be another episode of our show until we get a good look at her. Still, I miffed. Why didn't she pick me? I wouldn't mind being a vampire for her. I've got what it takes. I'm both evil and polite. What is it my old bridge partner has that I haven't got?
Yes, please, our most evil temptress, just have dinner with him. He's desperate for a date, and I'd like a night off once in a while.
But we must press on until that possibility occurs. We enter the house at Collinwood. A seance is in progress, or rather the tail end of one. Victoria, are you all right? Says Elizabeth.
No. Would you be if you were being hanged on the gallows in accusation of being a witch in 1795? All those ropes! I'll never wear a turtleneck again!
Roger. Dreadful idea, this entire seance. Dreadful idea.
Barnabas. Yes, horrible idea. Whose was it?
Why are you all staring at me like that?
Makes no sense to me, as it was my idea.
Victoria.
Burke! Where's Burke?
Carolyn.
Oh, dear. Must we explain to her all over again that he died in a plane crash? Peter! Where's Peter? Now who is she talking about?
Could be someone from the foundling home, for all I know.
And the scarecrow! Where is he?
Now I'm really lost.
That one has just got to be from a book she read.
Hardly the girl to comfort you when the shutters creak. I told you.
Roger, we don't need your acerbic remarks. We need a doctor.
Julie Hoffman. I'm a doctor. Well, wonders never cease.
Not bloody likely.
That's the most English thing I've heard you say since you arrived from England.
Can we all please calm down?
Yes, let's all calm down, and let what's-her-name use her doctorate.
Brandy, anyone?
By all means, says Elizabeth. No, thank you.
Well, that was an excellent idea. A true unveiling of my son's problems.
I didn't want it to sit, Roger. I'm sorry. It seemed a better idea than simply sending him away to a boarding school or hospital.
You know, I thought our problems were fairly standard before Miss Winters came to stay here. Since she arrived, it's as though we create twice as many problems when we attempt to solve one.
Well, I'm grateful that another green blob isn't at the root of it all. That's solved enough for me. Cousin Elizabeth, we did establish it was merely an asylum patient in a green coat.
Ah, I know I wasn't here for it, but I shan't believe that.
I saw the beastly creature, and I'm satisfied it was a patient.
I saw it too, Uncle Roger, and I hardly believe the idea that a floating green monster that wreaks havoc on the kitchen, eats flowers, and attacks David was a patient from Wincliffe.
I don't care what it was. I'm just grateful that it's gone. Has been for a month now, and I don't need a seance to put my mind to rest about that. Ouch!
Hecubus, get the microphone higher.
Sorry, Master. I've given Miss Winters a sedative.
Don't suppose you got any more in that bag of yours?
I think what you've got in that glass is sedative enough for you.
Indeed. I think I'll pour another.
I'll help Miss Winters up to her room.
I'll come too, Mother.
I'll help as well.
Oh, why don't we all go up?
Goodness, what is this, a slumber party? Please, Barnabas, show Dr. Hoffman to the library. Mrs. Johnson laid out the coffee, and it must be nearly cooled off by now.
And so the three ladies go up the stairs, says Milligan, to Victoria Winter's bedroom, whilst Barnabas and Dr. Hoffman adjourn
to this library we've never heard of.
So, shall I start in on the dreaded Dr. Woodard topic, and how responsible you were for it?
Oh, you really know how to show a girl a good time, Barnabas. Have a biscuit.
Crunching.
So, from what I gather in the family diaries, there was all sorts of visitors during the time Vicky claims to have gone back in time.
Yes, indeed. Poor Ben never got a wink of sleep, nor did I.
Yes, digging all those graves. Poor fellow.
Oh, yes, well, and digging other things.
Oh?
Yes, all those chamber pots, night in, night out.
Chamber pots?
Well, you didn't think we had those pretty little lavatories you so elegantly flush on a whim, did you? Oh, no. Plenty of digging outside the cemetery went on back then with all those guests. The whole place simply reeked. I can't tell you the softness of general odor that exists in this day and age. You ought to be grateful.
I am. Thank you for mentioning it.
No charge. I was wondering.
Yes?
If you would like to go to the pictures tomorrow night.
What? Oh, please. If you want to see Mad Monster Party, you can go by yourself. With all the supernatural ruckus around here, I don't see why you need to watch a movie about it. Don't you care at all what has happened with Vicky or Phyllis Wick?
Well, I suppose. But frankly, all the excitement has worn me out entirely. I think I'll have another cup.
Why bother? It's only postum.
Fulvia.
Milligan.
As the night wore on, Carolyn and Mrs. Stoddard prepared the grieving Miss Winters to her chamber.
Victoria Groggy.
Oh, Peter, where is he? Mother, I'm a little worried.
So am I. Let's tuck her in.
I don't think, well, what I mean is, if she really believes she was living in 1795, well...
What?
Maybe we should leave a chamber pot under her bed.
Don't be ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous. It's practical.
I know. Because there already is a chamber pot under the bed.
Mother. There is?
Yes. Would you like to check?
No!
Neither do I. That's why it's there. Roger showed it to me when we were children to scare me. And frankly, it still does.
I wonder if there's one under my bed. Or David's.
I used to wonder the same thing when I was your age. And you know what? I still do. I don't look under there for any reason. When old map-makers found unknown territories of land that they didn't know what to do with, they wrote, "Here be dragons." As far as I'm concerned, under the bed, there be worse things.
Vicky, would you like some water? Oh, is it clean? Clean? Why would... Oh, yes, it's clean. When I came back, I saw something.
Now don't you worry about that, my dear.
It didn't make any sense. There was a man, and he was sitting in a machine with a jeweled lever in front of him, and a great spinning disc at the back. That is strange. Did he do anything? He looked more surprised to see me than I was to see him.
Here, I'll put that glass down, and you go right to sleep, Victoria. You look exhausted.
Meanwhile, Barnabas and Dr. Hoffman have returned to the foyer to say goodnight to Roger.
Hmm? Going off so soon, you two?
It's nearly 1 a.m, Roger.
I know. You usually don't retire until dawn.
Well, I suppose you could call me a night owl, Roger, except...
Except since most owls are up at night anyway, saying night owl is completely redundant?
Exactly. I suppose you're both off again to the old house.
Well, I don't know. I suppose I ought to.
But for that little something you're not telling us? Eh, Doctor?
Roger exits. I thought so, Dr. Hoffman. You don't like my valet.
Oh, Wadsworth? He's all right, I guess, but...
Yes?
He's continually fiddling with my laboratory and bringing down odd ingredients that I don't need.
Well, I must admit, I thought the extra order of CO2 was a tad on the excessive side.
Oh, no, I ordered that.
What?
Don't look at me like that. I like dry ice. It helps me to concentrate. We should be on our way.
Wadsworth, currently in the laboratory at the old house, is drafting a potion.
Wait.
That looks like my potion. What's he doing with my potion? How did he get the formula?
Hecubus, you didn't. You couldn't. You destroyed my potion in the last installment.
No, Master. Of course it's not your potion. I wouldn't have made a switch or anything like that. Evil.
I'm forever blowing bubbles, pretty bubbles in the air. They fly so high, nearly reach the sky, then like my dreams they fade and die. Fortune's always hiding. I've looked everywhere. I'm forever blowing bubbles, pretty bubbles in the air.
Oh, do go on, you singing fool. How wonderful. Why don't you join a barber shop quartet and leave this ghastly house?
Madam, I can think of only one ghastly thing currently in this house.
Oh, do tell me, Wadsworth. Maybe I can get it to vacate the premises.
Ah, no, madam. Allow me.
What are you doing? Put me down!
Madam, I am merely keeping the house tidy. Now, if you would please stop struggling, up we go to the front hall. Oh, Wadsworth, I see you have things taken care of, as usual. Having fun, Doctor?
Barnabas, tell him to put me down!
My dear, you can see he's only doing his job.
Barnabas, if you don't have him put me down right now, you can forget about my finishing the experiment!
Oh, but I already have.
What?
You see, Julia, after seeing that you have so little regard for the help I hire, and keeping this place ship-shape, your various threats over the weeks, and your little visits to the Gumshoe Peterson in his law office, I've decided it may be simpler to hire another doctor and dispose of you.
What? He can't do that. That's not in the script.
I can't believe it.
Fooled you, didn't I? Wadsworth, put her down.
Shuffling.
Well,
you hardly thought I'd let you get away with that postum joke, did you? I wouldn't have.
All this fuss over a coffee substitute? For Pete's sake!
Bradford, Yes, someone called me? No, too soon. You go away. Forget that you're Peter Bradford. Will do.
Master, you are evil. I always wondered how he lost his memory.
Hecubus, shh. Hoffman.
I've had it with you all. I'm off to bed.
That was quite an interesting feat.
I have a hard time believing you really had much concern over my choking her so much.
Sir, that choking business is very serious. My picking her up and getting her up the stairs? That was just plain funny. All right. Yes, it was. Sir, I've made an effort to clean your steering window, if you'd like to make use of it. Ah, yes. What? The one you used to use to bring your young lady to remember you. What are you talking about? Don't try to fool me, sir. I told you I know enough.
Then explain it.
Well, here, for the beauty of a darkened teal sky and wispy curtains, the lattice frame is solid, and what do you usually think of when you look out of it? Oh, yes. Maggie.
Meanwhile, at the Evans abode...
Oh, why can't I sleep? That dream, it's troubling me again. But is it a dream? I was somewhere so close, but so far away. Like another place. But it looked like here. Like a different time.
Maggie, are you all right?
Pop. Yes, Pop, I'm all right.
Coffee's on the perk if you want some.
Well, why not? I might as well. I can't sleep anyway. I do wonder why.
Shuffles around, sounds of padding footsteps and couch creaks.
I've had trouble with that as well.
Keep tossing and turning. My nerves are jangled.
Me too. I keep drinking cup after cup of coffee all day, and I just can't seem to relax.
Exactly. I keep on brewing the stuff, and it doesn't make any difference. I keep getting more and more fidgety. Then I tried some of the coffee at the Blue Whale, and that didn't help either. Should put some whiskey in it, maybe.
Time enough for that. Pop?
What?
Did you ever finish that portrait Mr. Collins wanted?
Oh, ages ago. I was considering going around to see him. Oh, I'm not sure why. It's awfully late.
I'll go with you.
What? Just like that?
Well, not until I finish this cup, anyway. And back at the old house.
Wadsworth.
Well, now that you've managed to summon her again... Perhaps you could do a little explaining while we wait.
Oh?
A few things, sir. I suppose it is just as well that I give her these earrings.
You already said you were going to.
But do you understand why, sir?
Of course. They were Josette's, and likely belong to someone who resembles her anyway. It's not a worry to me if you insist.
No. It is because you never forced her to see them or wear them.
And what does that mean?
It means all that is in her may form an associative memory with something that has no other troubling memory clouded over it, sir.
I see. Why do you want this?
Well, you are my employer, sir, and I do wish that, as such, he has what he desires. But peaceably, and not forcibly, if you catch my meaning.
If you could do that, it would be good, sir?
No, it would be spectacular. Any other unbelievable questions before she arrives?
Well, I've spent some time polishing the silver. There is one bit I was interested in.
Oh? My cane? How is that compelling to question me about?
I think there is a little evidence of Mr. Loomis on it.
Care to make a comment, sir?
You don't know enough. You know too much.
Well, you might calm yourself when you realize I have your better interests in mind. I understand that he may not have been the most superior underling in the course of matters.
But have you considered that he was already rather abused to begin with?
A bit. See anything similar in yourself there, sir?
Oh, yes. I'm afraid I do.
Yes. So rather than concern yourself with him writing memoirs to betray you, don't you think you might have put some credit in his way?
All right. How?
Well, you will have to come to terms with the fact that, though he was accused of kidnapping Maggie Evans, it wasn't really him. Alone. Was it?
Are you trying to catch me out somehow? Or are you just queer all around?
Thank you for saying it the old-fashioned way, sir. It's been a while since I've heard it. But no, I wouldn't keep your mind on the same lady if I felt she was in any real harm. Again.
And what type of harm do you expect from me?
Well, the cane, sir. Got a little carried away with something that was meant to help carry you. Yes?
All right.
What difference does that make? Well, beating servants is rather an old concept, you see. You want to make sure you don't give yourself away with how much age you really have acquired, do you?
Oh, you mean I shouldn't just withhold my anger for the sake of others?
That would be a better reason. But what with your history, I wasn't sure you would find it as practical.
The practical reasons appeal to people more.
Astounding. You do have a way of expressing things, Wadsworth. Suppose now that I've given Miss Winters the music box, that I should take it away and try giving it to Miss Evans again?
No, but I believe you ought not to pursue Miss Winters again.
Oh, and why is that?
Well, although many generations' connections may dispel any real worry over relationships, I still think she is a little too close for comfort in your regard.
What do you mean? Do you know something about Miss Winters that would make her family?
I only know it's a stronger possibility than anyone realizes. I have been to the main house and seen enough from Mrs. Stoddard to know that she suspects a connection. A very strong connection, sir.
Cousin Elizabeth.
That is an awkward thing to carry.
Yes, and it might be nice for you to take off that hypnotizing spell over your cousin Caroline, sir. I'm sure the kind of awkwardness of being so close to a relative isn't all that light on her shoulders either.
Ah! Sometimes the butler really does do it. And now that Dr. Hoffman has had her huff and come back to the main house for a snooze, she won't really get one. As Caroline needs to interrogate her via Barnabas's request, but then she magically and thankfully loses interest in doing so.
Dr. Hoffman.
Oh, you. Trying to win a battle for your cousin again? Maybe you should stop sneaking around Peterson's office for my notebook, and just let it be for once.
You know, I think I can now, though I'm not sure why.
Oh, that sounds like a trick.
No, really. Can we just talk?
In the middle of the night? Why not? Don't suppose you brought any cookies to this pajama party. Very well. It is your house, after all.
I just thought you might give me some solution to feeling rather unwell. You are a doctor, after all.
Actually, I'm a never mind.
What's the ailment? Well, I'd definitely quit bothering you if I wasn't so submerged in Barnabas's own hypnosis, of course. But more to the point, I feel pretty seasick having gotten such a piercing hickey from a relative, even if he is 6 generations removed.
Ah, well, I don't have a drug for that.
But I think we can work something out. However, you really do like that Mr. Peterson, correct? Oh, I suppose so. Well, no. I've always been curious about him, really.
That's a good start. Could get unspooked about the other problem by diving into a better relationship.
And if Barnabas ever gets any better,
maybe he'll finally feel some remorse over the whole thing. Heaven knows there's a lot of things he should already be sorry for.
No kidding.
Still, I'm not too pleased that my experiment turned him into an overaged walking corpse.
Yep. That was rather unpleasant to get close to.
Still, in all of this, Carolyn, I must admit, you did come in at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Curing him from that experiment? I think I may have come in at the right place at the right time. I guess blood donation is a thing families do. Though goodness, I thought I didn't like needles.
Well, that's still a worry. I hope the association with him drawing your blood to regain his old, well, young self won't come up if you ever do need to have blood drawn the usual way, or get an injection.
That's good to know. But I believe I've felt better thinking about being at the right place at the right time now. It changes the perspective of the whole thing. By the way, some of that stuff Barnabas told you about his past?
Yes.
If Victoria did just come out of the past, I'm guessing his story wasn't all that accurate, huh?
Why do you say that?
I was in her room, and not only did she explain a lot of it half asleep, she explained even more in her sleep. You think he's just gone mad from his own time travel problems?
That and being a vampire. There's a duality of major issues. Plus the length of it. It's not like he was in bed for a year or something. I've seen people gone mad from shorter comas.
Well, I guess it's all well and good that he's not a mummy or something. That would be even more shocking.
Yes. And I have to wonder, why don't you ever have one of those around here, too?
The doctor has a point. We've been wondering that as well.
Well, there is one in A Dark Shadow's paperback, but then we do mostly keep to the TV show here, other than our inventive alterations. And now we return to the old house for a random hangout session between the Evans and their slowly regrown friendship with the old house for whatever reason.
Good evening, Mr. Evans. Miss Evans.
Hello. Well, Regal staff. Shiver my top tails. That's a surprise.
Although, I'm not sure why I made such a nautical outburst about it. I should say not indeed, sir. Please come in.
Pop, I told you Barnabas got new help recently. You've been working too long with those Steinbeck projects. How are you ever going to know what the West Coast seaside looks like? Our sunsets are entirely different from their sunsets.
Why is that?
Because, sir, the ocean opposes the land on different sides. We wake to look at the sun rising over the ocean. They finish their days with the sun setting over the ocean.
Hmm? Well, it really makes no difference in Monterey. The shore is just a big basin. The sun doesn't set over the ocean there.
Oh, yes, you are correct, sir.
I like this new butler.
Valet, sir. Oh, well, I suppose it makes little difference.
Yes, butler, valet, housekeeper, the works, eh?
Mr. Collins needs all the help he can get in one neat package.
This is true, Mr. Evans.
Oh, it is delightful to see you both.
Ah, Mr. Collins, I suppose you can't sleep either. I swear there is something in the coffee around here that is keeping us all awake.
As long as it truly is coffee. Please come in. Sit down.
Wadsworth, do you suppose you could attend to our wakefulness?
Sir?
Well, you do seem to work miracles. I'm wondering if you, perhaps, had a suggestion to make.
Well, I do have an old family blend I can work with now that the kitchen is in order.
There's a kitchen?
Well, it was a bit antiquated. Willie did some of the wall and window maintenance, as well as some of the plumbing. When there was a moment handy. Rare as that's been. Then Wadsworth took on the various details of replacing the equipment and having it installed properly.
What? Him? Really? He seems like he wouldn't want to get his hands dirty, much less his shirt.
Oh, no, no. He didn't do everything. There was a lot of direction and people hired here and there. As I look around this place, it all just seems to blossom as it used to.
Eh?
Used to? Why, yes. You know, during the summertime and it warming up, I can recall all the flowers. Wait, what was I saying?
Wheel squeaking.
Here you are, sir, all poured and prepared, a full pot, cream and sugar.
Well, my goodness, a tea trolley, even if it is serving coffee.
And the old porcelain service, too. You, recognize the dishes? Of course, they... Oh, you must have had me over at some point in the last few months. That must be it. Miss Evans, may I ask your assistance with the crumpets?
Oh? You need help with something? That's a surprise. I suppose I'll see about it, just to find out what I could do to improve any tasks you have.
It's a matter of lemon curd or jam, madam. Any preference?
You could have just asked me that.
Well, I suppose you have some inkling that I wanted a private moment.
You haven't got that much of an interest in me, surely.
Not in that way, madame. However, there is a little something an old friend wished to bestow upon you. Unfortunately, it has to remain a secret from whom it came. But I can assure you that secret isn't me.
Oh? Anything else I should know about it?
It may conclude some of the odd recollections you've been having trouble with, or at least spark them. However, I ask you not to open this case until you arrive in your own room at home in these late hours.
Don't tell me. I'll open it, it'll spring out like a joke can of peanut brittle.
Perhaps.
All right. Thank you. Anyway, how about what we've discussed we just keep honest?
Oh?
Yes. Jam, please.
Very good, madam. Moselle.
And now that you're enthralled with chamber pots and coffee cups, I invite you back to the newer house.
Good heavens! Do you know what time it is?
Don't go blindly through life. Let me use the power of the tarot to show the way.
What the devil?
Talk to me now for your free reading.
Of telling me who loved me. It gives me such a thrill. I know it always will. My head is spinning, and just from learning your estimation of me. And as for you, I'll say, I feel the self same way. You are the cream in my coffee, and you all the salt in my stew. You will always be my necessity. I'd be lost without you. You are the dark in my collar, and you are the lace in my shoe. You will always be my necessity. Oh, I'm wild about you. You give life savor, bring out its flavor. So this is clear, dear. You're my worst, dear. You're captain and crew. You will always be my necessity. I'd be lost without you. That's all.
All due respect to The Kids in the Hall, Clue, 1980s film, George Powell's The Time Machine, John Collette and Jan Kenbrovey, Miss Cleo, and of course, Dark Shadows, 1960s TV show.